You're listening to Coffee with Innovate Finance, where we speak with experts from the industry on the changing face of financial services and the future of fintech and financial innovation. I am Rashi Pandey, Head of Membership and Growth, and I'm very pleased to welcome Tom Vodin, who's the Strategic Partnerships Lead at Bridge. So Bridge are on a mission to shift power and control back to merchants, utilizing payment orchestration to empower merchants to innovate, scale, and adapt. So thank you so much for joining us today, Tom.
No problem. Great to be here.
It is great to meet you indeed. So can you tell us a bit more about your role at Bridge and your background?
Sure. Yeah. So my background is largely in payments. I previously spent quite a bit of time at Visa, so obviously the world's largest payment scheme. So I started on their talent program many years ago, fresh out of school, actually. So I joined when I was just 18, went through that program, and ultimately spent many years moving through the Visa business, working in different locations around the world, the UK, the USA, spent a long stint in the Irish market as well, focusing on all sides of the kind of fintech ecosystem. So from issuing all the way through to merchant and acquiring. At the end, I ended up in a kind of new team for Visa, a new area of focus, which was looking at something called orchestration platforms. This was totally new, at least in the UK market for Visa. And it was an increasing trend that we were seeing in the market cropping up. You know, merchants were talking about it, acquiring partners were talking about it. And as the focus increasingly grew on the checkout space, the merchant checkout experience, we decided that we needed to start up a team to look at it. So I was one of the first members to kind of take that role, looking at orchestrators in the UK and I market and really starting to understand them, work with them. And through that, I basically grew a huge interest in the space. And the more I heard it talked about, the more I kind of thought this is the future of merchant payments. And that led me to look at how I could actually move into the orchestration space myself. I was also looking at kind of downscaling the size of company I work for. I'd spent a lot of time in a corporate environment, you know, in order to learn and kind of push myself, really wanted to work in a fintech environment, a kind of small fintech. And so I came across Bridge. It wasn't actually one of the clients I was looking after, but I really liked Bridge because they were a little bit smaller, a little bit early in their journey. And I thought the leadership team, as I went through that process, were fantastic and really kind of shared that vision that I had for orchestration. At that point, Bridge had a lot of technical connections, which I can talk more about, but didn't really have any kind of relationships with those technical connections. And I identified there was an opportunity there to form a partnerships function. I'd seen it done really successfully in some of Bridge's competitors. And so it came at a really good time for both myself and Bridge, I think. And so I joined to lead partnerships. So I've been in the company since December of 21, and I've been working since to kind of build out that partnership strategy and really start to solidify and deliver on those partnerships themselves.
You know what I was going to say, Tom? There's excitement in your voice, which I absolutely love. Just to tell you, I come from a payments background as well, actually, very much in the smaller fintech space as well, especially, you know, during the nascent days in London when people didn't even know what fintech stood for, you know, being there very long now. I'm pretty much a rock. But anyway, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Can you tell us a bit more about Bridge? I mean, you mentioned partnerships, you mentioned, you know, orchestration quite a few times as well. So what was the original idea behind Bridge?
So Bridge is really formed out of a number of kind of ideas that came from our leadership team now, who were working for merchants or merchant platforms at the time. And what they were observing, as well as others in the market, was that, you know, merchants were very much at the mercy almost of gateways, acquirers, and all these payment options that exist today. They need to have them to accept payments. There's an increasing number of them, but really they had very little control once they integrated. And it was a lot of work to integrate into them. And you know, as a merchant, it's very hard to turn around to some of these payment partners and say, look, the offering I'm getting is not up to scratch, or I'm looking at this new innovation in the market, but you don't have it, and then do anything about it, because it requires huge tech resource, but it also requires a constant kind of look at the market to say what is going on. This, you know as well as I do, that the market is developing at huge pace. And therefore, from a merchant perspective, many of whom who don't actually have payment functions or teams who are so, you know, focused on this. A lot of that is often managed within finance, for example. They really, you know, can't actually focus on this stuff. And so the idea is that Bridge puts that power and control back into the merchant's hands by giving them access to one single integration into the Bridge platform. And what we then do is we give them the option to integrate into, you know, over 200 acquirers, 100 PSPs, over 300 alternative payment methods, where we've already done the integration work, and all they need to do is ultimately switch it on or off, and put in controls around that, which really, again, puts that power back into their hands. Now, not only does that give them, you know, more leverage than they would have had before, but it also means that they can really stay ahead of the curve in terms of what's happening in the payment industry. And also look, you know, across their global footprint, for example, for a large global merchant to say, okay, in the UK, I'm going to enable this payment method by Bridge, but in Brazil, I'm going to enable this payment method. So really adapting to those local markets as well. And again, we allow them to do all of that through the one single integration into Bridge, which hopefully is all they'll ever need going forwards for their payments.
This sounds actually really cool. Like 200 plus acquirers, that is something, right? Like people, I think, don't realize how much work goes into that. The fact that you guys provide it as a, pretty much like a one-stop shop for merchants, that is really cool. So can you give us a brief, you know, overview of what is Bridge's vision and mission? It's probably in your name as well. But what other problems are you trying to solve at Bridge?
I think we do see ourselves as you say, in the name, being the bridge between the merchants and the ultimately what we would class as kind of the downstream endpoints that they want to reach, be that an acquirer, be that a gateway, or be that many other types of, you know, entity that sit within the payment journey. But I think what we then do is really help them to optimize their payments. So we do that through a number of ways. You know, if you look at things like abandonment rates, a lot of merchants are seeing abandonment, you know, 70, 80, 90% even in some cases. And a lot of that is just due to the payment journey being too complex. But the problem they have is that the payment methods they have today are not allowing them to simplify that payment journey, or they're not able to offer the customer's preferred payment method, which would secure that sale for them. And ultimately, if they're seeing that abandonment, that is all missed revenue for the merchant, missed sales, and often, you know, that ends up with customers being dissatisfied. So what we are able to do is, as I say, give them that offering, which one, enables them to have all that choice for merchants, but two, enables them to really create the kind of ultimate user experience, which they can adapt for whatever merchant type they are, whatever they want. And as I say, can differ depending on geography or different, you know, brands that they might operate. We can kind of do all of that for them and work very closely with them on that. So I think it's not just being that kind of piece of middleware, which we certainly are. You know, in many ways we're an aggregator, but then above and beyond that, we're offering a whole host of other features that ultimately are enabling merchants to optimize their payments.
I'm going to sound very repetitive again, and I don't usually say this on every podcast, but it does sound really, really cool. So at Bridge, I can imagine, you know, I mean, setting up must have not been easy, and I'm sure there must have been some challenges there as well. So can you share some of the challenges that you guys faced when you were starting, and have they evolved? Are your challenges the same as before? What are they? If you could share some with our listeners and, you know, are your peers pretty much in the fintech space, that would be really great to hear.
I think there's two ways to look at this. There's firstly the kind of internal, you know, cultural challenges almost that we face as a small but very fast growing fintech. And then two, there's the industry challenges. So I start with the latter. You know, I've seen myself, as I kind of described in my opening, the development of orchestration as a concept, the awareness in the market. You know, a few years ago, orchestration wasn't known by that many merchants, but also by, you know, many people in the payment industry. And now I see it as a kind of, you know, the key buzzword every time I go to a merchant facing payment conference or event. You know, everybody's talking about orchestration. Now that differs in terms of how it looks, but the key thing is that awareness is now really there. So I think that challenge has very much been overcome. But on the flip side, we are still having to spend a lot of time educating merchants, the industry, on what orchestration is, but not only what it is, you know, what the optimum orchestration kind of offering actually looks like. Because again, you know, we are seeing some players call themselves orchestrators, and we might argue that potentially that's not orchestration. For example, it's aggregation. But I think, you know, the industry is very much on a journey, which we've made good progress on. There's a little bit more room there to kind of improve education and awareness of orchestration as a concept, which I think will then ultimately lead to everybody having that kind of ultimate idea of what the panacea is for orchestration and in the merchant payment journey. On the flip side, the kind of internal journey we've been on, I think, you know, has definitely seen challenges as we've grown. We started very much as a tech-focused organization. I think even when I joined in December of last year, probably 80% of the organization was tech. And that was important because we were building ultimately a product, which then we needed to go and sell, but we needed to make sure we built it, you know, amazingly well first. Again, we're saying to merchants, we're your single point of integration. If we're not built to a standard that is worthy of being a single point of integration for enterprise level merchants, then we're not doing our job properly. So the key thing was that we really built a huge technology function which could create that fantastic product which we've got today. And now we're kind of chasing the market a little bit in terms of our commercial growth. So we're trying to scale a commercial team, be that sales, marketing, partnerships, as quickly as the market is growing and the appetite for orchestration is growing. And that is a challenge, but it's also a big opportunity for us, which I think, as you can probably hear, we're enjoying at the same time as kind of seeing it as a challenge.
Yeah, I can pretty much hear it in your voice, like I said before as well. So, you know, I mean, of course, like you've spoken about challenges, what you guys are doing as well, which is absolutely wonderful. And I can totally see your USP, like I said before, about being the one-stop shop solution for merchants. But how do you differentiate yourselves from other firms and platforms out there?
So there's definitely a number of orchestrators now out in the market, some of whom, as I say, in terms of their commercial journey, are definitely further ahead than us. There's also some new players who are coming in and doing some very interesting things. I think there is, you know, I say that orchestration, there is a panacea of it, but there's room within that for kind of different approaches to the kind of operating models, some of the technology, and the even the kind of direction of the types of merchants that orchestrators might want to serve. I think we focus very much on being an independent orchestrator, in many ways seeing ourselves more of a tech platform rather than a payment platform. Now, of course, what we're doing is we're serving within the payment journey. We are a technology layer, and we need to make sure that we retain our independence. So this is really key to us. You know, and my role specifically is working with the payment entities that we're connected into. But whilst I'm doing that, I need to make sure that we're retaining independence, because ultimately what we're trying to do is serve a merchant. We're not trying to serve necessarily our downstream payment partners. So making sure that we really keep that independence, so that if a merchant comes to us and says, I want XYZ, or these are my preferred payment partners, we just deliver on that. We're delivering what the merchant wants, and we're not trying to steer them in any direction that they might not want to go, or we might be doing it for a reason other than the fact it's the best product fit for them, for example. You know, we're tending not to make decisions based on our own commercial benefit. For example, when we look at that downstream kind of payment optionality, we're thinking, okay, this is the merchant. We're trying to create the best payment experience for them. Therefore, we need to be independent and make sure that we can offer them the best option in the most independent way for them. And I think that, you know, keeping that core to our offering, both in terms of our product platform, but also to our commercial approach, is a real differentiator and something that is talked about all the time by our leadership team, and I believe will continue to be going forward.
Thank you for being very honest about this, by the way. I really do appreciate that.
No worries.
Moving on to, well, how do I say this? What we're living with right now, the cost of living crisis. How do you think open banking and buy now, pay later crossover?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. So we're doing a lot of work in terms of looking at partnerships in both spaces.
Yeah.
As I said, we kind of got to be trying to keep ahead of the curve in terms of the payment trends. Both of these are huge payment trends. And obviously they're, you know, especially buy now, pay later, is fairly mature in the market now. Open banking is a little bit newer, but we're starting to really see it take off. So we're doing a lot of work with partners in this space. And it's a really interesting one to think about, because I think there's a little bit of risk there in terms of the cost of living crisis and the situation that we're in, but also a whole lot of opportunity. And actually, you know, the question is great, because when you think about combining these two products, that opportunity is almost realized in my mind. So on one hand, you take buy now, pay later, and what that's offering is flexibility. And we know that in times where people are struggling, having payment flexibility is really important because it allows them to better manage their payment options. You know, I take issue sometimes with the way that buy now, pay later is presented as kind of, you know, unsecured, unregulated lending. And I'm not saying that there aren't aspects of that, but on the flip side, there's a real benefit to consumers in terms of predictability of payments coming up whilst not having to make one large outlay at the start. You know, traditional credit was entirely based on that premise, creating manageable payment options for people. Therefore, buy now, pay later should in many ways be seen as that same thing. Now, where open banking comes into this is when we look at decisioning around that credit. So open banking is ultimately unlocking a whole host of data for merchants, for lenders, for all, you know, types of entities who sit within that buy now, pay later payment journey. And what it can, in theory, do is give great insight into customer spending habits, into customer risk, and allow lenders to make more informed lending decisions on those customers. You know, we're seeing some open banking providers offering years and years of customers' payment data as part of that offering. And if you think about that from a lending perspective or a merchant perspective, you can see that your customer has been, you know, making all their payments on time, is not making loads of risky purchases, you know, has enough money in theory for the buy now, pay later loan that they might be looking to take out, but maybe just wants to manage their payments better because they're a little bit worried about cash flow in this difficult time. Then actually, using open banking, you'll be able to know that with confidence, and therefore offer them a buy now, pay later credit line with confidence, knowing that you're not putting customers at risk. And I think that that's really important. And again, gives all the benefits of managing your payments in a flexible and transparent way with the knowledge that you have all the data you need to know that you're lending with confidence to that customer because they can afford it and they'll be able to manage it because they're reliable.
I completely agree. It's very important with regards to that. Building on open banking, can you share some advantages of omni-channel banking, like open banking? Sorry.
Yeah, so open banking is largely focused on the e-commerce at the moment. Not entirely, but largely focused on e-commerce. And as I say, it's got a lot of room to grow in the e-commerce space. I think customer awareness is a key bit here. Also, you know, how beneficial or not beneficial for issuing banks is going to be a key part of the conversation going forwards, which I think will ultimately help or hinder growth. But actually, there's a big opportunity to grow it in the face-to-face space as well. So open banking online brings things like cheaper acceptance to merchants. It also, in many ways, is more secure, or at least it allows that step up of SCA to be bypassed because of the additional authentication you have to do when you approve the payment in your banking app. Now, those are two really key benefits that we're hearing a lot from merchants. You know, acceptance is expensive for them, especially when their other bills are rising. Again, think about the cost of living crisis. If you're a merchant and your energy bills are rising, you might be thinking, okay, where else can I improve my cost and spend? Payments is one of those areas. So open banking should be seen as an option for you there. If you can bring that into the face-to-face space for many merchants, that's great. And then on the flip side, there's that customer friction of SCA. Now, that obviously only exists online at the moment. And when people are thinking about bringing e-commerce environments in store, which we're seeing increasingly after the pandemic, you know, many merchants will be looking at that and saying, okay, I want to bring an e-commerce environment in store, but I want to do that in a way which doesn't cause extra friction in that customer journey, e.g. an SCA step up. So omnichannel open banking enables both of those things in an e-commerce environment. And I think there's some really cool ways that it can and will be implemented. And potentially you could, you know, help merchants bypass the traditional card terminal journey that we've become so used to as consumers, but give them a really nice customer experience on their own mobile device, for example, in store. You know, that's something which I think we'll start to see more of going forwards.
Yeah, I think every experience has to be on your hands now, isn't it? Frictionless. That's
the exactly.
So what are your views on regulation in buy now, pay later?
I think we welcome regulation as an organization in this space. I think it's probably needed. Again, you know, you do see those horror stories, might be a bit strong in some cases, but you see those stories in the press that are, you know, quite distressing when you look at them and see some of the trouble that customers are getting into via buy now, pay later means. On the flip side of that, you know, buy now, pay later is introducing choice and flexibility, but it's also introducing a really nice customer experience, which is ultimately taking on the experience of filling in paper forms, for example, at, you know, at some retailers when you used to want to buy a washing machine and pay in installments. You know, it's a massive step in terms of that user experience for getting a flexible, manageable payment line. So there's a real balance here where you kind of, you want regulation because you want to protect that first host of customers, but you don't want to do it in a way which is going to inhibit the great user experience that some of these providers have created. We welcome any regulation that definitely does the first bit, because that's the most important thing is protecting consumers. And actually, I think in many ways, we've seen regulation in the payment space increasing innovation. And I think that this could be an opportunity to do that. It's just in the way that the buy now, pay later providers and other players in the mix embrace that regulation, put it into force. But I think ultimately the most important thing here is that customers are protected. They have mechanisms in place when things start to go wrong for them that they can go, for example, to the ombudsman in the UK and say, look, I'm having a problem here with this provider or with this credit line I've taken out. And therefore that support is then in place, which can help them. And I think regulation is ultimately the mechanism that will deliver that. It will be interesting to see how other countries outside of the UK start to look at regulating buy now, pay later as it increasingly grows around the world.
Yeah, like you very rightly said, right? Innovation is great, but first and foremost, we have to think about protecting the customers as well. So coming back to the merchant side of things, with an increased number of, you know, checkout options right now, you spoke about, you know, e-commerce. How does this change merchants as well as consumers' habits?
Traditionally, cards have been, you know, the large payment option that most merchants have offered. You know, you'll often find alternative payment methods were listed secondary to cards in the payment journey. I think we're now starting to see that shift. And I think in some cases, cards will become secondary to other payment options for a whole multitude of reasons. Be that cost, be that customer preference. And again, when you look at certain countries in the world, for example, some of the Nordic countries or some of the Latin America countries, alternative payment methods are the norm. And they offer a really nice user experience, which does bypass that traditional card journey. On the flip side, I certainly think there's, you know, the card journey is still really important. And a lot of alternative payment methods actually have a card journey baked within them, which again is really important, but can improve upon that traditional card offering. We almost see this being verticalized in some senses, or at least we see certain trends with merchant types. For example, you could take luxury retailers. For some of them, the most important thing is making sure that their payment journey matches their product offering. You know, they're selling luxury goods to potentially more wealthy demographics, and therefore they need a payment journey which matches that. So they want to retain that relationship with the customer, and they want it to look like a kind of valuable high-end payment journey. Therefore, they're not going to do what, for example, JD Sports has done in the UK and have, you know, 5 to 10 payment options, a kind of rainbow in the checkout. But on the flip side, some merchants want to offer that consumer choice because the demographic of customers that they serve or their brand sits really well with having 10 different payment options. And ultimately, they don't mind how they get paid as long as, you know, as long as they do get paid. And therefore, the more payment methods they have, the more options there are for customers. And therefore, it's more likely that a customer will have their preferred payment method in checkout, therefore potentially increasing conversion. The other interesting thing we're seeing in this space is the kind of monetization of the checkout space. So certain merchants are now looking at their checkout space as a space where they can, you know, they can sell part of their checkout almost to the highest bidder in terms of payment methods. You know, alternative payment method one could offer them some money and they could turn around and go to alternative payment method two and say, alternative payment method one has offered us this. What do you think about, you know, paying us more to be higher up the checkout space? And from a merchant perspective, that's a really nice revenue stream. So it's all about monetizing their payments. And then via the Bridge platform, they can easily shift that preference order. They can easily enable shift volume between providers. So we enable, again, that kind of optimization, but also increased revenue for merchants, which is really important, especially coming out of the pandemic for a lot of merchants.
So am I right in saying this? So as a consumer, and this is a totally personal opinion, but when I go to an e-commerce website now and I do see several payment options, it kind of gives me a bit more trust with the e-commerce site. Is it true or false?
We do see that. Trust
Okay. Yeah.
is certainly built around that. I mean, there's even other studies, for example, when you just look at card payments, for example, that show if you can show the card art, so an image of, a kind of average Lloyds card next to your Lloyds card number when you type it in, that actually builds trust as well. It's a really
Right.
interesting thing when you look at what builds that trust within the customer checkout space. The one thing I would say is that we're working with a number of merchants who have very old, hosted checkout pages from their gateways. And they do find that some customers, especially if they're spending a lot of money, will look at that and say, I am not going to risk spending my money through this page because it doesn't necessarily, one, reflect the brand of the merchant that I'm spending on, but two, potentially doesn't look legitimate. There's a lot of nervousness in certain parts of consumer groups where they are, seeing a lot in the news about fraud and scams and all that kind of stuff. So even just having a nice branded checkout page, as you say, with recognizable payment options, with potentially card art, all those kind of things, just build that trust, which again increases conversion for a merchant, reduces abandonment, and therefore increases sales overall.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I'm a marketer by background, so loyalty and trust is a big one. So, we're just about wrapping up now. So before I let you go, are there any other success stories at Bridg that you could share with us, which is like, public knowledge?
One of the key things that we do, which I haven't mentioned, is around resilience. So this is really simple, but it's actually really, really effective. So we offer merchants almost a stack ranking of payment providers. For example, I'm a merchant and I'm connected into three gateways. And what I want to do is I want to say that Gateway X is number one, Gateway Y is number two, et cetera. Now, if my number one choice has an issue, it goes down. Or there's a problem, for example, with the 3DS journey. What we then do is we reroute in real time to your second option. From a consumer perspective, I have no idea this is happening, but ultimately it's more likely that my transaction will be approved because we have retried on behalf of the merchant with the secondary provider. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because one of our merchants, First Group, a large transit operator in the UK, we're seeing 6% of the transactions via the kind of volume that goes via our platform, at least, being declined because of a problem with 3DS in one of their payment journeys. So that's 6% of their spend via Bridg that was not going to succeed. And that was on no fault of their own, no fault of our own. It was down to that gateway journey. And it was just an honest technical issue, actually, it turned out. But what we were able to do is reroute that instantly to a secondary provider, therefore saving that 6% of volume. And if you think about that at an enterprise scale for an enterprise level merchant, that could be a huge amount of missed revenue. But not only that, you're saving those customers from potentially becoming disenfranchised and disappointed in your offering, because we know that customers who become frustrated with the merchant, for example, because their payment fails, may be a lot less likely to shop with that said merchant again.
It is very true. As a customer, I can definitely say that. That's very, very true. So that's really cool as well. So orchestration, resilience, there's a lot that you guys are working on. And before I let you go, can you please share with us, and before we close, what is next for Bridg? Any exciting news you can share with us?
We've got a few selfishly, we've got a few exciting partnerships going on. So we just, on the topic of open banking, signed one with open banking provider called Vine.
Wow.
We've got a great partnership going with those guys. They have an amazing customer experience. When we were looking for open banking providers to onboard to our platform, we were really looking at the user experience, and theirs is fantastic. So we're really excited about kind of taking that up and pushing it forward. We've got a couple of other huge partnerships coming up, actually, with incredibly large companies, which almost shocks me looking at our size compared to theirs, but really excited about those. So keep an eye out. And then on the merchant side, we just signed a large merchant called Travel Counsellors. They're a large travel operator in the UK and across some of Europe. And I'm really excited to see, you know, that project come into fruition, see what we can do with them. And then also looking forward, you know, to those other merchants in our pipeline, what fantastic innovation we can bring. And then internally as a company, it's just important that we continue to grow in a kind of sensible way. Again, market conditions are tricky, but we've got great backing and we've got a great team. So we're really confident looking forward. And I'm just excited to see how we scale over the next year and how orchestration actually as a concept and an offering in the market really, really starts to pick up. I mean, with some huge merchant brands, you know, some of the merchant brands that we've seen thinking about orchestration are mind-blowing and really exciting.
Tom, thank you so very much. And I'm so glad that we've ended on such a positive note. Thank you for your excitement. Your enthusiasm shows for Bridge. And you know what? More power to you and the team at Bridge.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise. And to all our listeners, if you want to know who Bridge has partnered with sooner rather than later, please do tune into Coffee with Innovate Finance for more upcoming episodes and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more, not only our programs and events as well, but our member news, including Bridge's future partnerships as well. So as always, until next time, take very good care of yourselves and we'll see you soon.